Support for the Capital Connection comes from Clean Path New York, working to support New York's economy and bring New Yorkers renewable energy while helping to create jobs. CleanPathNY.com for information.
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Yancey Roy, the Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday. Welcome, Yancey.
Thanks, Alan.
So, Yancey, are you keeping track of my favorite place in the world, Fire Island, New York?
Well, if it's more like the state capital this week is what we're keeping track of.
It's where I was raised, of course. So, Yancey, it's the end of the session. As we sit here, things continue. But the whole resolution of what's up won't be done on time for everybody to understand it. This is sort of business as usual, isn't it?
There's always a rush the last week of session. There's hundreds, I mean, probably even thousands of bills under, consideration. There's all sorts of high-profile stuff going on with having to do with guns and abortion rights and other things. And the other thing that happens is the legislators, every person, there's 213 of them, you know, their own priorities for local bills. This can range from some sort of oversight of a tax-exempt property in their district to some sort of local issue. So they all have like dozens of these that they're trying to rush through and get through at the last minute. And that's why you have these all-day, sometimes all-nighter sessions in Albany to close out the end of the year, the end of the legislative year anyway.
Yancey, you've been watching these characters for many years. You're not that old, but you have watched them. So my question to you is, people don't like the legislature. We know that. We know it from polling. They may like their own guy or woman, but they don't like the institution. And you have to watch it all the time. Do you hold your nose when you're watching it?
Well, you know, the thing about those types of polls, it's like you said, people will generally say about the legislature, somewhat like they say about Congress, like, well, I don't like Congress, I don't like the legislature, but my guy, my woman representative is great, I like her. And I think that that's what happens with New York legislators as well. Look, there's a 213 of them, a lot of them trying to do a lot of hard work for their constituents. You know, like any sort of place, some work harder than others, some of them get in trouble occasionally. So, and that certainly makes a splash when it happens.
The issues that we are now facing, we have a response to Roe v. Wade. We know that. We have affordable housing that is very important to a lot of people with no place to live. We have the whole question of increased or decreased mayoral control in New York City. We have a move towards making every building that is constructed electric. So you can take your pick, and if you don't remember all of them, I'll help you.
Well, you know, some of these are driven by national events. Something that you wouldn't have predicted maybe at the start of this session was the fact that guns and abortion issues are kind of dominating the last week of session here. And that's, of course, folks who follow it know for sure a couple of things. One is there was a leaked draft opinion from the U.S. Supreme Court suggesting that they are on the verge of overturning Roe v. Wade, the landmark decision that had first granted abortion rights, and that could be overturned. It could be overturned real soon, like this month. And so as a result, Governor Kathy Hochul and the Democratic-controlled state legislature has put through a number of bills sort of strengthening or expanding access, making sure that if other states move to severely restrict abortion and say a provider from here provides those services, they can't be, for example, extradited to another state for providing services to, say, a woman who travels here. There's a number of issues like that. New York already had pretty strong abortion rights laws, but this is a reaction that we're seeing from legislators because there could be we could be on the cusp of something monumental in terms of a judicial decision really soon. And then the guns, of course, is driven by all the unfortunately, we're saying this again, the latest mass shooting, two in the last 3 weeks here, of course, in Texas, and also right here in New York State and at a Buffalo supermarket. And so some of the issues that or rather the bills that they're pushing that are going to be approved Thursday, the final day of the session, include raising the age for purchasing a semi-automatic weapon from 18 to 21, which is something that, who knows, might get challenged in court down the line. There's also some other measures, such as increasing penalties for making a mass threat, also a prohibition for obtaining body armor. We saw that the shooter in Buffalo had full gear as he walked, tactical gear, as he walked into the supermarket and killed 10 people. So, it's interesting that sometimes the sessions are very predictable about what's going to be dominating them, and sometimes outside events take them over. Mm. I mean, you know, a few months ago, and it's not that crime isn't still an issue, but for a while we were hearing just about general street crime, and the Republicans really trying to make an issue of that and feeling like they could make headway in the elections this fall. Well, now because of mass shootings and abortion, these are issues that, the Democrats react to and want to pass laws. And generally, those are a couple of issues that will probably, abortion rights and gun violence are issues that generally will help Democrats in the fall. So it's a lot of the dynamics have been changing in the last few weeks here.
Well, Yancey Roy, let me ask you this. The Democrats control the legislature. They have the governorship. They have made a couple of false moves, I suspect, in terms of assuming that everybody's on a very liberal side right now. Are they getting together and trying to figure out, the Democrats, what the most favorable reception they're going to get to their mouthings are?
Well, you know, you saw a lot of progressive liberal legislation
yep.
passed in 2019 and 2020 when they first assumed the majority, a supermajority in the Senate. Now that we're in 2022, you've seen folks sort of want to put some limits. Some of the Democrats want to not go so far on some of the progressive measures. And for example, there is a bill called Clean Slate. The idea of it is that that your record, if you have a criminal record, it should be able to be sealed after a certain amount of time, because the folks who support it say, you know, something could have happened in your past 10 years ago. You've moved on. You've, you know, improved your life, and that shouldn't keep you from getting a job or other things. Now, a lot of the progressives have been pushing for that bill in the last few days here, but a lot of moderate Democrats have been pushing back against it, feeling that, you know, they've already done a lot of criminal justice laws a couple of years ago, the controversial bail law, and for some there's not any more appetite right now to do progressive criminal justice measures right
now. Why not?
Now.
So why not? Why isn't there appetite?
Because the Republicans won a lot of local elections in 2021,
exactly.
especially on Long Island and some other areas, really using the crime issue against Democrats. And I think there's a real concern that it could hurt them again in 2022. So you have this pushback from the moderate wing of the Democratic Party against some of the more progressive measures.
And how about their leadership? How about the Democratic leadership? You've got a Speaker Hastie, Andrea Stewart-Cousins in the Senate. What, in fact, is the appetite for progressive change?
I think both leaders have a task here where you're not just voting how you might personally feel on issues. Your task is to have a sense of your conference. It's more than 100 Democrats in the Assembly. It's 43 Democrats in the Senate. And you've got to have a sense of a couple of things. What do the majority of your conference want? And also, how do you help your members win re-election?
Sure.
And sometimes those all work in tandem, and sometimes those are at odds with each other. Like we were just talking about, moderates pushing back on some criminal justice measures. You know, that's if the leaders don't let some of those bills go through, it's because of the moderate pushback and because some moderates are concerned about their reelection chances. So I think the leaders sort of have this task of seeing both the forest and the trees at all times and trying to steer things in a direction that's, well, beneficial to their members.
Well, Yancey Roy, is there the potential for sort of a political civil war between Democrats who control both houses? In other words, you know, those leaders, Cousins and the Speaker, have to worry about how they're going to keep their troops happy.
There always is a tension. Civil war might, I don't think I would go that far. There's always this tension, and that's for sure. And there are primaries coming up in June, at the end of June, where some, in some cases, you're finding moderates against more progressives in Democratic primaries. But I don't, there's always a little bit of a tension, but I don't think that it's so great that it's to any extent of like fracturing the Senate Democratic Conference or the Assembly Democratic Conference at this point.
Now, let me ask you this. The state's gasoline tax is now suspended, as I understand it. Does this help Governor Hochul?
I don't know that it helps a lot politically. The first of all, you got to look at how much you're saving. It did go into effect the first day of June. The state's gas tax, once you combine state, federal, and local sales tax, and say we're looking at $5 a gallon, your tax on that comes out to roughly about 70 cents, right? Mm-hmm. The state is suspending about 16 cents. Your local county might have suspended some. Roughly, if you go to the pump right now and you pump in about $50 worth of gas, which is not hard to do at these prices, you probably save about $2.50 out of that $50. And I just don't, you know, all of the politicians are touting it that we push for it. I just don't know if it's that big of a savings that people are going to, I mean, it's not that people are going to reject it and say, I want to pay the tax, but I don't know if it's that big of a help to any of the elected leaders right now. The Republicans had pressed for a full suspension of all the taxes, which is an idea that might have had a lot of favor, but in the practical reality of trying to work through the gas tax, that didn't seem to be something that the state could do easily because of the way the tax is administered. So you kind of get a half a loaf. Again, it's like if you put in $50, you're probably saving, depending on what county you live in, you're probably saving about $2.50.
So let me ask you about redistricting, if I can. There is now major chaos in New York over congressional and state Senate lines. Tell us where we are now in terms of what the new districts mean and how the races are shaping up. Remembering Antonio Delgado jumped to become lieutenant governor, and you got a hell of a race in Manhattan between Carolyn Maloney and Jerry Nadler. So, you know, to me, Carolyn Maloney, who's always been a friend of mine, you know, is in worse shape because Nadler's been there for a long time and is very well known and generally doesn't get that kind of opposition. So we could see some real changes here.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's affecting the congressional delegation of New York and also the state Senate delegation. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure your listeners know by now that the original maps approved by the legislature got thrown out by the courts, saying they were illegally gerrymandered, ordered a neutral person called a special master to redraw districts. So that's how we got here. And this person tried to make competitive races without necessarily worrying about protecting incumbents. And so in some cases, you've got incumbents matched up against each other, like at Nadler versus Maloney. And in other areas, you've got either open seats or seats that are going to be very competitive. You referenced Antonio Delgado, who resigned from Congress to become lieutenant governor. His Hudson Valley district, very competitive. I mean, Marcus Molinaro, the Dutchess County executive, wants to run for that seat. Pat Ryan, the Ulster County executive, has thrown his hat in. Look at other races in New York City. Bill de Blasio, the former mayor, is now going to run for a seat in Manhattan that is right now open. I think you're going to see a lot of interesting competition. There's a lot of interesting competition on Long Island for Republican and Democratic seats down there because all of those have become a lot more competitive. And then, hey, also let's not forget the state Senate seats. The Democrats in Albany had a supermajority, which means they had more than two-thirds of a majority. They had 43 out of 63 seats. I think that holding on to that supermajority might be tough this year. One of the things that we saw is after the lines came out for state Senate, we've seen a couple of incumbents say that they are not going to run because their district has changed so much, and frankly, it's probably politically unfavorable for them now. Jim Gorin, a moderate Democrat from Huntington, Long Island, has said he won't run for re-election. Mike Martucci, a Republican from the Catskills Hudson Valley area, he said he's not running. And in an interesting twist, John Brooks, another moderate from Long Island, when the maps came out a day or two late, 2 days later, he said, I'm not running. Then he said he got flooded by calls from constituents and others, and he called us back up and said, I am running. So there's a lot of changes going about as we get closer to the deadline for candidates to get in or out of those races.
So speaking, Yancey Roy, about competitive races, how about the race for governor? Governor Hochul has suffered a bit in terms of popularity under the Buffalo Bills stadium deal and the lieutenant governor debacle, but she's still the favorite to become the governor, isn't she?
Yeah, like any incumbent, she's in the driver's seat. She's got the most campaign funds, and she's got the highest rating in the polls. But it's not to the extent that she is necessarily a prohibitive favorite. We're sitting right here first couple of days of June. We're now in the home stretch of the Democratic primary. She's agreed to two debates, but not all of them. In fact, there's one about to take place where she has declined to participate. And so that will give Long Island Congressman Tom Suozzi and New York public advocate Jumaane Williams, the other Democrats in the race, a chance to maybe shine a little bit without the governor there. But then we're also, next week, we're moving into a schedule where all the debates are going to pick up. I think the first Democratic one is June 7th, which would be Tuesday of next week. And then there's a couple of Republican debates coming as well. You're going to see a shift in all of the political attention going from the end of this session this week and what's happening in Albany to the campaign trail. And, you know, the Republican campaign is also pretty hard to predict right now. There's four candidates there. There's not been a lot of polling. Candidates tending to release polls that, no surprise, show themselves doing well. But there's not been a lot of independent polling here, and so this one's a little bit harder to predict. It's the four Republican candidates get ready to begin their debates.
We are talking to the best political reporter in Albany, Yancey Roy. And Yancey, we're always pleased when we get a chance to ask you your opinions about what's going on. So let's go to the Republican side of the aisle. You got Lee Zeldin, who the Republicans seem to be supporting for the gubernatorial nomination. Andrew Giuliani, who I recently interviewed and who was impressive, and Harry Wilson, who many people think is the adult in the room. So what do you make of it?
Well, they've all trying to, you know, carve out particular constituencies to win the primary. And this is a race where, you know, one of these guys could win with not much more than 30% of the vote. It might be really carved up. As you say, Lee Zeldin, the congressman from Long Island, he has all the institutional support of the party, from the party chairman to a lot of the county chairs. But we've seen over in this century, this short century alone already, you know, being the favorite of the party apparatus is not necessarily a guaranteed of victory in a Republican primary. We saw it in 06. We saw it in 10. But Zeldin certainly has a lot of the party behind him. Giuliani has the highest name recognition easily of any of the candidates. He also has the highest negative ratings, all of that associated with, of course, his father, Rudy Giuliani, the former mayor of New York. But name recognition, sometimes that can be enough to win in a crowded field. Rob Astorino, the former Westchester County executive, he like Harry Wilson are campaigning as saying they're the most electable Republicans. Basically, in so many words, they're basically saying neither Giuliani nor Lee Zeldin are moderate enough to win in a blue state like New York in November. Perry Wilson, the businessman who is running and is spending a lot of his own money on this race, he also happens to be the lone pro-choice abortion rights candidate in the Republican primary. Now, that's the kind of thing that might hurt him in a primary, even if it would perhaps help him in a Democratic-dominated state in November. But, you know, again, that might end up hurting him in the primary. So it's a little hard to see, you know, again, how strategic do Republican voters want to be when they cast their ballots here at the end of the month.
We are talking to Yancey Roy, who I consider to be the best political reporter in Albany. Yancey, we hear there's legislation that would require SUNY campuses to have polling sites where students could vote. What's behind all of that?
Well, a lot of the advocacy, good government groups such as NYPIRG, which, you know, New York Public Interest Research Group, which is funded largely a lot by student fees, they want polling places on campus sites. And the argument there is that elections take place while the school year is going on. It's not like you have it during Christmas break or Thanksgiving break. And so it's hard for students to get home and cast a ballot. And so you should, you know, they say our aim should be always to have the maximum turnout that we can. And so let's make it easier. Let's have polling sites on campus. The argument against it, mostly from Republicans, is a couple of things. One is money. They say local county boards of elections are already stretched thin, trying to run regular polling sites, much less adding more. I think there's also a concern among some Republicans that they would want students casting ballots in their home areas, whether it's, you know, back in New York or anywhere, rather than in the local elections where they're not really connected to the people and the events in that county. It's been a long push for NYPIRG and others, but like I say, there's been a number of opposition from other politicians, and it's also not risen to the top of the issues of voting issues for the legislature either in terms of voting and election priorities.
Okay, now let me talk to you about Governor Hochul, who said that if New York's concealed carry law is struck down at the Supreme Court level, she would call the legislature back to Albany to respond. Can you fill us in on what is that? And two, what is she going to do about it?
Well, in simple terms, New York has one of the strictest laws among states about carrying a concealed weapon. And some gun rights groups have filed a lawsuit and it's made it up to the Supreme Court. And there's a ruling expected soon, could be this month, June. And based on the way the courts ruled on other gun cases in other states, there are a lot of people that are expecting that the New York law will be struck down as too restrictive in regards to the Second Amendment. And that'll be interesting politically, depending on what the court does, because there's a lot of gun rights groups and a lot of Republican politicians, I think, would like to see the court rule against the state's gun law, or, you know, would favor ruling that way. But at the same time, if it throws out the gun law, you know, look, New York is a state, a blue state, that there's a lot of support for strict gun legislation. So politically, it might end up helping Democrats, giving them another issue to campaign on as we go into the fall.
Are Democrats in a relatively stronger position than usual right now, or do you see any real weaknesses in their appeal?
I think all the national headwinds say it's a Republican year. I think we saw that in 2021 in the local elections in New York. Like you said, the start of this year, that certainly looked the same way. Democrats and the legislature were defensive on a lot of issues. But again, the development of the possible overturning of abortion rights and this spate of mass shootings with military-style weapons, those were a couple of issues that weren't in the forefront back in January when Democrats were more on the defensive. So I guess what I would say is that in terms of the New York elections, the Democrats are not as in a strong a position as they were, say, in 2018 or 2020, but they might be in a better position than we thought they were in January of 22.
Okay, very quickly, Yancey Roy, the very top political correspondent in Albany for Newsday. And let me ask you this, frankly, and that is Andrew Cuomo. Is he done? Is he cooked? Stick a fork in him?
Well, I don't think you can ever say altogether done, but you bring that up because there was a deadline this week for if you were going to run as an independent candidate for governor under, a made-up party name. This happens all the time. Remember, there was the rent is too damn high party. Mm-hmm. If you were going to try to run as a candidate on a new party line, you had to send in your petition signatures this week. And we didn't see that happen, although a lot of people had been speculating that Andrew Cuomo was itching to jump back into the race. Looks like that's not going to happen now. But, I mean, he is out there, you know, trying to keep his name in the news. He went to a couple of churches after the Buffalo shooting to deliver addresses and trying to stay in the mix. So, politics, someone's future can change a lot in 12 months, as well we certainly saw with Andrew Cuomo himself. So I don't think you can ever, you know, rule him completely out forever or back in. We just have to kind of see. I mean, look at it. Look at 12 months, or rather 24 months ago, no one would have expected Cuomo would be out as governor. Yep. But here we are.
Here we are. And here we are because our guest has been Yancey Roy, the Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday. Yancey, you are terrific, and you are the best of the legislative correspondents that we all depend on. So thank you for being here with us.
Thanks, Alan.